meeting philosophers of science. I'm sorry to say that. It turns out that in India, we don't. I have met historians of science, but not philosophers of science. And also, I'm very happy to see them using Lagrangian and math, because my mental image of philosophers was very different. They will talk to you in language which you don't understand, going to ontology and this and that. Anyway, so it's very nice. So this picture was meant for Philip Stamp. Unfortunately, he's not around, because he was complaining there is not much nature around perimeter. I told him that there are ducks, and if you go behind, there are deers and peacocks and very nice park. Anyway, so I'm going to talk about kind of take a sidestep from what Phil Anderson said in his very famous article, More is Different. And when you look at many of the things that is happening in the quantum world, my world is very simple. It's not end of the universe or beginning of the universe. It's matter that you come across, the stone that you kick, and so on. So there, if you look at some of these modern matters, quantum matters, symmetry enhancement, symmetry breaking or symmetry reduction is there, but there are situations in which symmetry enhancement is there, and very fascinating thing seems to happen. So my task today is to summarize them in the spirit of what Anderson said in his article, just to elaborate the idea of emergence in all of science. Okay, so that's my, I will take a very simple thing, some modern quantum matter, and then elaborate on these issues, how surprises happen. And to me, emergence is a kind of practical thing. Like, I'm sure when Einstein introduced the concept of collective mode and phonon to explain the low temperature specificity, it must have been a great shock for the science community to realize harmonic oscillators in any solid at low temperature, that systems behave as if it's a collection of harmonic oscillator. But now with hindsight, it looks very simple. I think the things will keep moving, in my opinion. So now this is, we have talked a lot about Phil Anderson. And I was visiting him for a week in July. So he came to my office. Princeton has a beautiful fourth floor where there is this Princeton Theoretical Science Institute is there. It has a very nice window with flowers outside. So I caught him when he was looking at it. So this is Anderson. He's running 88, and in December he will enter into 89. And remarkably agile and sharp, and he often complains to me that I don't reply emails that fast. So this is his famous paper, More is Different. And it's a, so this is what I plan to do. Anderson emphasizes symmetry breaking, just to illustrate the basic ideas. So I will focus on some quantum matter, and there are interesting phenomena, namely symmetry enhancement, and it has very interesting consequences, quantum order, non-abelian excitations, topological protection, entanglement, and holography, and so on. Many of them, at least, are to me surprising when it happened. And of course, some of them were shown or implied by novel experimental results. So to me, in that sense, they are very nice emergent properties. I will illustrate Mott insulator and quantum spin liquids as an example of that. This is a famous paper which appeared in Science magazine. So the title is More is Different, and then there's a subtitle, Broken Symmetry and the Nature of Hierarchical Structure of Science. Actually, Anderson wants to talk about science in general, and then being a condensed matter physicist, he takes broken symmetry as one of the basic things and tries to illustrate various ideas. And he, one of the things that is, as you know, that was a time in which there was probably more, science was more hierarchical than it is now. And anybody doing high energy physics had more funds and other fame, whereas somebody doing solid state physics apparently was thought of as an applied physics, not interesting, and so on. So one of Anderson's point is that there is a hierarchy, starting from solid state physics, elementary particle physics, way down to social sciences, psychology, physiology, and so on. So he says, this hierarchy does not imply that science X is just applied Y. It's more than simple applications. At each level, there are intellectually challenging problems and issues, and they're equally challenging, if not more challenging. So this was his thing. Then he, of course, as Hamas pointed out, each time you read this paper, you know, there is something new there. It's a very fascinating paper. Now, I'm going to talk about the world of quantum matter. Basically, it means matter that we see around, matter including light, natural and man-made. This is something very important. Now, when we look at biology, we talk about emergence in the context of evolution. Billions of years and things have changed and evolved, and you see fascinating emergent properties which you can simply comprehend and explain that easily. Now, when it comes to quantum matter, there are quantum matter that has already existed, stones, polymers, minerals, and what is fascinating is we don't realize the very stability of atom is quantum mechanical. It owes its stability to quantum mechanics. Otherwise, if you take a hydrogen atom, an electron will fall into the nucleus and disappear or give out a lot of energy, whereas it's kept stable in a Bohr orbit because of quantum mechanics. And then rigidity of solid is basically chemical bonding and quantum mechanical. Even very mundane thing like specific heat. If you take diamond, for example, and if you measure specific heat at room temperature, we think that room temperature there is no quantum consequence. Actually, the specific heat of diamond will be so low compared to Dulong-Petit's law because its Debye temperature is very large. So you have to invoke quantum effects to quantitatively explain specific heat of a hard material like diamond. Similarly, many things that we take for granted, like magnetism. If you take a piece of iron, we talked about iron girders and so on, and if it is magnetic, it is due to quantum mechanics. Then there are, of course, superconductors at low temperature and insulators, oxides, sulfates, polymers. There are a variety of materials. So you can say that many of the properties which we take for granted and some of them which are very novel are due to quantum physics. Then this new field, quantum biology. You know, we always thought that quantum mechanics perhaps stops in biology after giving rise to chemical bonding. And then you determine reaction rates and write down some reaction equation. And then you know you have various ideas and do experiments and so on. And it looks as if there are surprises in photosynthesis and electron transfer, proton tunneling, and for example, how birds are able to detect very small magnetic field. Very subtle quantum effects seem to play some very important role at the wet and room temperature environment. So there are surprises, people are working on it. Now, what I will talk about will be man-made material, because I don't think anywhere heterostructures exist, even in interstellar space. A two-dimensional electron gas in the presence of strong magnetic field exhibits fascinating quantum Hall effect, which has dominated ideas in condensed matter in the last 20 years. Then this new high-temperature superconductor, which again has made very important contribution to condensed matter physics and other superconductors. There are paraelectrics, like a very simple, well-known strontium titanate dominated by quantum fluctuation. Heavy fermions, Condé insulators, superfluid helium-4, helium-3, supersolid, quantum dots, cold atom gas, photonic crystals, and a variety of. So if you think about evolution here, it's a man-made evolution in the last 100 years. We are preparing new materials, new form of quantum matter, which exhibits exciting properties. Okay. Now, the rules of the games, when we come to quantum mechanics, as you know, where quantum effects are manifest, is very different. They are not simple Newton's laws. You have states of the physical system represented at states in Hilbert space, and that's a linear vector space. So if you give me two states, the coherent superposition is equally meaningful. It's a physical state. And psi is a complex number, the probability amplitude. So this makes life very exciting. So just this property alone implies entanglement if you look at two subsystems and non-classical correlations. So it's amazing that these rules, the fact that we have Schrodinger equation and we have this Hilbert space and complex psi, makes the world, quantum world, extremely different and many, many things go on. Normally, quantum mechanics is very shy. It hides itself. It doesn't show up. It pretends as if the world is classical. But if you look carefully or if you prepare situations, it can show up, like superconductivity is a remarkable macroscopic quantum phenomena. OK. Now, then another fascinating thing about quantum matter is there are two families of particles, bosons and fermions, just follows from the mathematics of permutation symmetry of complex wave functions. If you interchange, it could change sign or it could not change sign, because what matters finally is mod square. So this defines two types of quantum systems. And amazingly, if you say take such collection of non-interacting thing, you get a beautiful emergent property, namely the Bose-Einstein condensed state, which in the presence of tiny interaction can exhibit superfluidity and wonderful properties. Very unexpected thing. Similarly, if you take fermions and then form a ground state, they fill up, they go to momentum space and fill up your lowest energy states, which is so-called Fermi-Si, including Pauli principle coming from this antisymmetry. And it's a wonderful state of matter. For example, if you take metallic copper, if you want to explain its resistivity as a function of temperature, even around room temperature, you cannot escape Fermi-Si physics, that there are electrons living close to the Fermi surface, and only a small fraction of electrons whose energy is in the scale of kT are actively participating in various physical properties. Like if you take spin susceptibility, it is dominated by excitations around the Fermi surface. So very simple properties are determined by organization of electrons in this quantum state as a Fermi-Si. So this is a remarkable emergent state. Nobody could have imagined it before quantum mechanics was born. Now, another thing about when you come to quantum mechanics is the vastness of Hilbert space. In classical mechanics, we are happy to live in six and dimensional phase space. Here, you have, let's say, some quantum number and position. And then there is a probability for finding the system in every of those configurations. Maybe there is some peak somewhere. So these, all of a sudden, the state that we are dealing with becomes too big, too huge. And of course, in many problems, like spin problem that we'll discuss, direct product of finite dimensional Hilbert space, like n qubits. So this is thing. And then, you know, then you do matrix mechanics and do wonderful things. Now, as is, OK. So if you look at the evolution of our own understanding, Einstein introduced the idea of photon to understand photoelectric effect, quantized electromagnetic field. Then he introduced phonon in the context of crystals. Then we have excitations. Now, whatever I have shown in red are consequences of our broken symmetric phase. Like in a crystal, there is translation symmetry breaking. And in a ferromagnet, there is spin rotational symmetry breaking. In a superconductor, you have U1 gauge symmetry, U1 symmetry breaking. In charged density, you have translation invariance and so on. And they have corresponding excitations. But what is interesting is many of these states are amenable to simple descriptions. And you don't need to know much about entanglement if you want to understand ground state properties. So in some sense, they quickly become classical looking, and like they have some kind of factorized properties. So they are effectively non-interacting and non-entangled state. Of course, it doesn't mean that you cannot create excitations in the system and entangle them. For example, you could imagine creating phonons in the crystal and entangling them, creating an entangled state. Or you could do it with magnons, or you can do it with phasons in superfluidity and so on. So the ground state has an easy description, but excited states and quasi-particles are quantum, and you can do wonderful things even with this. Then non-symmetry broken state, like a Fermi-Si, where there is no symmetry breaking, and that offers very beautiful possibilities. And you have band insulators, topological insulators, the concept of holes and electrons, which started in a humble way in Bell Labs. You know, people try to understand conduction in semiconductors using the idea of holes, electrons, and bands. And then it led to transistor discovery, and it has changed the world we live. Excitons and plasmons and polaritons and so on. So these are all, in some sense, quantum matter, which is simple to understand, which, about which you have very good handle. Now, once you put things together, in fact, I would have given a title. Anderson gave the title, More is Different. Coming from India, I will say, a crowd is different. Because it turns out, if you take these particles, which are very weakly interacting and so on, and put them in a dense environment, or a crowded environment, they start behaving differently, sometimes in a very, very nice way, like Japanese crowd. Sometimes Indian crowd is very different. So you have wonderful things. For example, OK, in fact, I will. So let me directly go here. So what happens is, when you crowd particles, for example, what you are doing is you are allowing Hilbert space restriction. And that seems to be a basic ingredient for the wonderful things that happens. So what happens, for example, if you take free electron gas, you have some behavior. Now you go to a solid like lanthanum copper oxide, where electrons are no more free. They strongly feel the periodic potential. And and the bands, continuum band splits into bands, and then effectively you can live in narrow bands. Now in the narrow bands, electrons feel the interaction much more strongly than in their free state. So wonderful things happen, including high temperature superconductivity, quantum spin liquid. Another famous example is Landau level. You have electrons in two dimension, they're happily moving and forming a Fermi sea, apply strong magnetic field. One electron energy level gets reorganized into Landau levels, which you all know form discrete levels with very high degeneracy. Now it's very crowded environment. So electrons cannot escape into other parts of Hilbert space. They have to live in limited part of the Hilbert space. And of course, they would like to gain energy. So then they start cooperating. This is amazing. So in when there is projection or when there is restriction of Hilbert space, the dynamics that whatever we have, the free kinetic energy and whatever potential energy you have, they cooperate and give rise to unexpected physics and remarkable thing. That's what we'll discuss now. Okay. Now here, you know, since we are talking about renormalization group, Leo Kadanoff's block spin, beautiful renormalization schemes and so on, we do renormalization in our day-to-day life without knowing that we are doing renormalization. We don't go to momentum space and eliminate shells and so on. For example, it's very common when you do ESR or NMR in or in many problems in magnetism that this is the following situation. You have some set of states, could be many body states or few particle states, which are coupled by some non-zero matrix element. You would like to solve this problem, you can solve it. But often, this has influence from some high energy state. So one way is you can just forget about them. That's a zeroth level approximation. Often they do influence this matrix element as effective matrix element. For example, you can start with this and then take care of this state through some perturbation theory where there is a small matrix element connecting these two states. So do a perturbation theory and you get some corrections like this. Now there are situations in which this V is absent and this alone is very, very important. We will see in the case of quantum magnetism, this is the situation. So this is a kind of renormalization, but this is not a continuous renormalization procedure. We identify from physics point of view that there are high energy states which has to be taken care of. They may influence you. In fact, this is somewhat related to what Philip Schlamp was talking about, spectral flow from high energy or infrared ultraviolet mixing. So I just wanted to point this out. Now, in this context, let's see how much time do I have. I have 8 minutes, so including question. So I will very quickly point out that a crowded situation of interacting electrons can be created in a Mott insulator. This is what happens. So this is a thought experiment that Mott suggested many years back. Imagine you have a collection of hydrogen atom forming a simple, let's say, square lattice. So let the lattice parameter be of the order of Bohr radius. Then the wave functions will overlap and the electron will run from one side to another side. And then it will form some very simple 1s band and the band will be half it. This will be a happy metallic situation. And Mott argued that suppose you adiabatically expand the lattice and let the lattice parameter become large compared to the Bohr radius, then something new happens because it is no more energetically favorable for an electron to tunnel to the neighboring atom and go into a block state because I'll have to pluck an electron out of a hydrogen atom. And also, I should have good electron affinity with other neutral atom. So put together, effectively, there is a resistance or a repulsion for an electron to go into a conducting state. So this is a Mott insulating state, very easily described in words. But for the last 20 years, we have been struggling to describe it quantitatively using many-body theory and looking at consequences. And what is remarkable about this insulator compared to the piece of wood that Shankar was alluding to, is that in wood or in even in diamond, nothing is active. In order to create any excitation, electronic excitation, I have to go to 5 electron volt energy to create a spin flip or to create a moving charge. Whereas here, because I have a hydrogen atom, I have only 1 electron per side, even though the charges cannot move, the spins are free. So there is a spin degree of freedom which is lying low, and they can cooperate through residual quantum fluctuations and do wonderful things. And that's, so it is a crowded situation, but people can speak to each other, the message can pass across, and many things, good things can happen and bad things can happen. So that's what happens. For example, quantum mechanics comes in a beautiful and big way. If there are two neighboring hydrogen atoms where the spins are effectively free, but quantum fluctuations will operate, occasionally this electron will jump to the neighboring site and come back. And then in the process, you gain an energy. But you notice that this is possible if you have a singlet relative state between the two electrons. If, for an example, electrons are parallel, Pauli will prevent this. There will be Pauli blocking and no question of going to the neighbor. So Pauli principle and interaction start distinguishing singlet and triplet. That's the beginning of quantum magnetism. So in a simple way, we represent it by an effective Hamiltonian, which is not derived by renormalization process, but a very simple elimination of doubly excited state. So this is also a renormalization process. But because it becomes even more difficult when you move away from this happy situation, which there is one electron per site. What is interesting is, we all know that if you have such a so-called antiferromagnetic interaction between, normally you go into an ordered antiferromagnetic state. Okay. Now, it was pointed out by Pauling in the context of graphene and then later by Anderson that actually, if you have spins which are half or very low spins, there could be very strong quantum fluctuations and the spins could get disordered spontaneously. And your ground state is well thought of as coherent superposition of several neighboring spins which form singlets and dance around. So this is called a quantum spin liquid. And Anderson wrote a paper in FEM 1973, then once cuprate superconductivity began, he realized that perhaps some physics of quantum spin liquid is going on, and that's also a great seat, or it's a template for high temperature superconductivity. I have no time to go into it. It's amazing that you move away from Fermi-C and go into localized state like a Mott insulator, you are preparing the system to become high temperature superconductors, including possibility of room temperature superconductor. So projection and restriction of Hilbert space, not completely restricted. It's like family, you know, you don't restrict the children too much, that will be bad. You give them a little bit of degree of freedom, they do wonderful things. That's what happens. Don't give them complete freedom also. Well, if that's with children, with grandchildren, you cannot do much. So what happened was, at that time, you take this simple Hamiltonian defined in this spin space, and then you want to realize some of the spin liquid state. We develop some approximations. And what we found was this, that is, a spin system, which mathematically is like a bosonic system, because there is no charge transfer, no fermion transport, starts behaving like a system in which there are fermions with a Fermi surface. So this is definitely an emergent property, which is unexpected, because you have a collection of bosons, they interact and they become fermions. And there were experimental signals. This did not come out from the first principle analysis. There was experimental guidance, and that's how Anderson thought about it. So in that sense, it's a remarkable emergent property. And then if you go a little further into it, if you want to describe this spin liquid state, it turns out it's very natural, or something somewhat natural, to enlarge the Hilbert space and then start viewing this problem as a gauge theory. As you know, if you go to gauge theory, A mu or vector potential, or they have more degrees of freedom. Finally, observed quantities are, you know, fields and so on. So in the same way, you start with spins and then you enlarge it, and then you find there is a natural way of dealing with spin liquids, and in the process you discover there are beautiful emergent gauge degree of freedom, namely a UN gauge degree of freedom and corresponding gauge fields, and then there's a local UN symmetry. In fact, I have put Ted Hsu in blue letter because some of you know, coming from Canada, may recognize Hsu as an MP from Kingston belonging to the Labour Party. He started with, I think RVB is his strength. Okay. So there is an emergent gauge symmetry. Then remarkable things happen. In fact, if you have this resonating valence bond state system in a, it's a two-dimensional problem in a torus, then RVB theory will suggest there are possibilities that you can have flux going in this way or going through this tube. So that leads to fourfold degeneracy. This is the beginning of great discovery of Kevilson and Rockshar or Haldane and Rezai and Zougang. When? Of topological degeneracy in another ways, translation invariant system. So this is the beginning of a new game, which leads to very fascinating possibility of anions, non-abelian anions, ability to do quantum computing using this dirty magnet. So the world of quantum matter, in the absence of symmetry breaking, so the only departure is people previously had long-range antiferromagnetic order data. That's wonderful. There are Goldstone modes. Now you quantum melt it, there seems to be very different level of organization. So symmetry, there is, as I said, in the mathematical description, there is symmetry proliferation. So this seems to be another route. Maybe it's unique to quantum world, I do not know. Maybe in the classical world there are examples, I have no idea. So one can keep talking about it. And there is a very enjoyable model by Kitaye, which came a few years back, in which all the dreams of RVB theory is realized in an exact fashion. That is, it starts with the spin model, namely bosons, and then you end up with a Fermi surface, pseudo-Fermi surface, Majorana fermion excitations, and so on. So let me conclude by saying that there are many, many things that happen, including this thing. This is, again, a remarkable emergent phenomena. We all know electron is, in the quantum mechanical sense, is a complex object. It's a Dirac fermion. It's complex. So it has real and imaginary part. Now this novel quantum matter has allowed you the possibility to separate the real part of a fermion from its imaginary part and keep them apart. It may sound very, you know, magical, but that can happen in one of the strongly correlated systems. And the remarkable thing is, when you do that, a fermion in Hilbert space is two, because you can have one fermion or zero fermion. Now, when you separate them in space, the mathematical way of saying is that their Hilbert space becomes fractional dimensional and particularly irrational. So there are interesting implications that if you create Majorana fermions, for example, the head of a fermion here, tail here, real part here, imaginary part, real part, imaginary part, and when you keep them separate and non-interacting, there are wonderful ground state degeneracies, and by moving them around, you can move in this degenerate Hilbert space and even do quantum computation. So let me conclude by saying that here is a family of quantum matter, including quantum Hall effect, where there is no spontaneous symmetry breaking. But if you look inside, there is a description in terms of Chern-Simons field theory, where there's some kind of local gauge invariance in terms of some fictitious gauge fields come. And here is a spin liquid where there is no long-range order. It's a paramagnetic quantum state, where if you look inside, there are gauge fields hiding, which high-energy physics colleagues love and adore. That comes in a very natural way. Often you get Z2 gauge fields, and there are consequences. Once you have this Z2 gauge fields and so on, there are this Majorana fermion and other non-Abelian excitations that are possible. So I did not point out that underlying many of these things is entanglement. Because I said that the original state that we started with, namely antiferromagnetic or superconductors, in some sense are like direct product state. Whereas once you start entangle them by restricting them into limited Hilbert space, not allowing them to go into the coherent superconducting state, many wonderful things happen. Thank you very much.